Even lemmings aren't as we thought, but people follow fascists because they lead. So says Pearl Puri in her book Footlights. I don't know whether that line just leapt out at me today, given what we're thinking about in the U.S. right now. And I don't know which leaders in particular she might have been thinking about when she wrote that. It is, however, in a poem that starts with the wonderful lines, "I dreamt McD's Happy Meals had packs of Canadian poet trading cards." And I kind of wonder then what a Pearl Puri poet trading card would have on it. Maybe it would have like stats on 20 odd years of poetry teaching or several years spent hosting the show Literary Landscapes on CKCU. Maybe it would list how she's included in three editions of the Best Canadian Poetry in English anthology. Or it might also include her self-described status as a concussed poet, one whose latest collection delves deeper than she'd gone before into her personal struggles and difficult memories, and ultimately her triumphs. Tonight, Pearl Puri will take part in a virtual verse fest event called Prelude. But first, she's on the line with us. Hi there, Pearl.
Hi, Neil.
Congratulations. Congratulations on putting this collection together. I gotta ask what you would put on that card. What's the number one thing that would be on the Pearl Puri trading card?
Well, I don't know. I actually want to do poet trading cards for Haiku Canada one year, so that we have like a sample haiku, and then, you know, how many book lists and where you live and what and date of birth and that sort of things.
So there could be this could still happen for you. Which leaders were you thinking about when you were writing that poem? What follows?
Well, it's more the human tendency of people to follow the worst possible idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You end that poem.
It was written before the area. Pardon me. It was written before the current U.S. politics.
Okay, fair enough. Predated the current administration.
Yes.
You end the poem, though, by saying, "If a few of us survive, our successors will have as much to do as we do." I love that line. Tell me what you meant by that.
Well, just the problem of racism and classism and all the other isms. I mean, we can spend our whole life devoted to trying to make people understand each other, but it's such an infinitely large problem, and so much is internalized that we can work our whole lifetime, and there's so many more lifetimes left with them all having to work to erase the same problems or fix the same problems.
And it's so interesting hearing that from somebody who has been writing for so long, who's had that chance to sort of see those ideas progress over the past, as I mentioned, 20 years or so. But I want to talk about that concussed poet title as well. You said it was a concussion a couple of years ago that pushed you to become more accepting of emotions, more accepting of emotional range. Can you explain the connection between those things?
Well, my first relationship to emotional range is more in the Vulcan planet. So, being a Trekkie.
I appreciate your statement, yes. That's
good. But I've never really been comfortable sharing emotions or talking about emotions or having other people. I was always taught that that's an imposition, that you just keep a stiff upper lip and you don't overshare or you cause other people to be uncomfortable unnecessarily. So I sort of took that to town. But since I had a concussion, especially, we think it's probably my third concussion, and each concussion is much more than the one before. Mm. So with this one, I had nausea, I had vertigo, but I also had emotional deregulation, so I had no idea how I'd respond for 2 or 3 months. And the littlest thing, I would get like hockey rage going on. So then I had to sort of like reconcile how this can be me and how, what if this doesn't stop? What if this is me now?
Yeah.
And then being stuck on my back with unable to read or write for a better part of a year. It gave me a lot of time to do nothing with no distraction but think and try to resolve all these things that people spend their life trying not to think about.
Wow.
So I had to come out with my poems.
Can I ask then, when you were feeling rage, for instance, or when you were feeling these stronger emotions, were you able to write then? I mean, were you able to...
Not really, no. No. Like they say, like, mental illness is not the friend of creativity. Traumatic brain injury isn't either. I mean, I couldn't really... I was just healing. There was nothing I could really do that was creative. I stopped all my creative outlets basically for over a year.
There's a poem in the book you have called "Sleeping with Head Injuries," where you're describing being in the hospital and your head heavy, spine drooping, and you're watching the hands. You say you want to photograph those hands between nurses and neurologists. Talk to me a little bit about that, because it sounds like even in that condition, even at that time, the creative observations were going on around you.
Well, unfortunately, I come from not the first generation of head injury. 12 years ago, my dad was in a horse accident where an ATV blew past the horse he was training on the road, and he was thrown from the horse, and he got traumatic brain injury as well. So it was me in intensive care with him for a number of months as he was healing his broken bones and broken neurology for a while. So I sort of had a foreshadowing in my life of what would happen to me in another few years.
That's remarkable to hear. Just lastly, I mean, you point out in that poem at one point the twine and wire, and I noticed a lot of the times in your poetry you pick up on wire, on chain link, on metal screws or hydro wire, things that connect the leash on the dog as well. You describe these things that often connect things. I'm just wondering, do you notice a lot of these connective objects around you?
Well, apparently I do, now that you've pointed it out. The poem is, the book is seeking connection and how things connect and how to connect to people with a compassionate eye. It's interesting that I was doing it through metaphor. I wasn't aware that there was that much of a pattern in the book.
I would guess that there's this fantastic line in Bath Time Lessons where you say, sometimes I'm covered in triggers, sometimes I forget that I'm a gun. And I just lastly, do you find yourself getting stronger through poetry, discovering strength?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it allows me to process. It's a form of thinking for me. I don't know what I'm thinking until I write it down, and then I still don't know what I'm thinking until I let it sit for a while, and then I read it and go, it seems that's in me.
I'm so glad that you put this collection together, Pearl. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's a thrill of a lifetime, really, to be on CBC.
We'll have you back. Don't worry. You'll be back. Have a break a leg tonight, too. Pearl Peary.
Thank you very much.
Taking part in tonight's...
One other?
Yeah.
The listing has changed for tonight because, oddly enough, my co-reader got a concussion yesterday and had to cancel.
Okay. So, but it's still happening at 7:30?
It's still happening at 7:30, but it'll be Ken Victor instead of Sadiqa.
Thank you for letting us know. All right, this is Pearl Peary as part of Verse Fest happening tonight at 7:30, and we've tweeted out a link to the festival's website where you can get more information. And Pearl's latest book of poetry is called Footlights.